The San Jose Sharks Audio Network is on 24 hours a day. Whether you're in the office or on the go, make sure that you download the Sharks SAP Center app and hit listen anytime. You can also find us on your computer by going to sjsharks.com/listen. If it's a game broadcast, breaking news, or a player feature, the place to find it is right here on the San Jose Sharks Audio Network.
Eklund with a shot. He scores! William Eklund caps an astounding comeback. The Sharks win it!
You're listening to the San Jose Sharks Morning Tide. Morning Tide.
Tyler Toffoli on a brilliant feed from William Eklund. Macklin Severini, his first National Hockey League hat trick. Smith shoots. Score! Will Smith just tied the game!
Now, here's your host, Ted Ramey.
All right, what's happening, everyone? It is finally here, the regular season tonight at 7 from SAP Center. The San Jose Sharks will be taking on the Vegas Golden Knights to open up their season. The pregame coverage will be at 6:30. Pre-pregame coverage starts at 6. Me and Brody Brazil from the South Bar at SAP Center. It'll be simulcast right here on the Sharks Audio Network and on Facebook, X, and YouTube for the San Jose Sharks on their digital channels. So we'll give you a little extra pre-game coverage. But to get into a number of topics surrounding the Sharks as we head into game number one, I am now bringing in the host of Sharks Pre and Post Game Live on NBC Sports California, my partner in crime, Alan Hoshida. Alan, what's going on, man? How are you doing?
What's up, Ted? It was a good day. We went down to practice. Then we hit the gym. We're feeling good for the opener.
Dude, I am excited for this for a variety of reasons, but just because we all saw what could be there last year. And I know we talked about how fun they were for a last place team, which is, you know, that's great. You know, it's better than being a boring last place team, but we're all waiting to watch this team take the next step. I just think the first question is, in your opinion, how should we be defining that first step, that next step? Is it playoff contention, or is it simply not being a team that's, you know, hovering around 20 wins?
I say not out of it by the new year. You know, like hovering around there for the new year would be good. It's kind of what I thought last year's next step would be as well, hanging around to the trade deadline and making Mike Greer's job a little bit harder. Now, some things happened last year where they traded off pieces early, so it made the trade deadline a lot more no-brainer. But I think if they could stay, you know, relevant through the new year, that means, yeah, they're not going to maybe sell off everybody in November or a Mackenzie Blackwood trade in early December. But that all starts with October. Right. And I know everyone talks about October being, you know, messy hockey guy, people figuring out who they are. Well, that's a great opportunity if you're a team that is projected to be in the bottom five to catch teams when they're not ready. And if you're the San Jose Sharks, you need to start faster. We were at practice today and I asked the guy, yeah, they don't want to look at the last 2-3 years where Octobers have been brutal for them. But they have to get off to better starts. And even if that's just 3 wins in their first 10, that's a better start, right? Four
significantly
wins. Significantly. Like, it just has to be better. And so I think it all goes back. A good step would be having a, you know, 400, 500 record in the first 10. I don't know if that's going to happen because you start with Vegas and Carolina and you go to Utah. But I think the next step is just being competitive from the get-go.
I agree. And I think that compete, it's one of the four C's we've seen from Ryan Warsawski's core tenets of this year. But I do think, and you can tell me whether or not I'm crazy to think this way, I do think there is a chance that because this team is young and excited, led by Macklin Celebrini at the, you know, vanguard of that youth, we're going to see more Shakir Mukhmudula, and we're going to see William Eklund continue his ascent. We're going to see Will Smith, Michael Misa, Sam Dickinson, Yaroslav Askarov. I know there's more names we could add to the mix, but I'm not going to be surprised if they kind of get, not necessarily hot right at the start, but if by the time they are into November and December, that they are floating around that playoff discussion, because I think sometimes that youthful vigor can carry them further than maybe we would look at it as saying, well, these are what their parts are, but the sum is greater. I mean, am I wild and just totally out of my mind to think that could be a possibility? I mean, I'm not saying they're going to make the playoffs. I just won't be surprised if they get off to a pretty decent start that has people saying, hey, look at the Sharks. And then it peters out as we get later into the year.
You got to ride the vibes, right? Right now, there's around the Sharks, there's a lot of optimism. There's more optimism than last year because we know what Macklin Celebrini is, and he's going to be with Will Smith, and that's going to be a tandem that's going to go together all year. And so if they can get off to a quick start, then everyone's going to come with them. You know, Toffoli, you know, the veterans too, right? You're also talking about the young guys, but also the veterans are going to feel their best at the beginning of the season, you would think, hypothetically, if everyone's 100%. But so I think you're right on there, right? The young guys are going to be antsy to go, and the veterans are going to feel at their very best before they start taking shots and they take hits and they start breaking down a little bit as the year goes on. So, yeah, I think that's the key. If they can get off to a good start, then I think their season, it's going to allow the fan base and even maybe the temperature in the room just to kind of stay kind of even keel. Like, who cares? You know, after the new year, things might happen that they taper off, like you said. But at least they started well, and the temperature of the room, they can see the productivity happening. They can see product looking better, turning into wins, and that's they got to finish. They got to finish the third period. That's going to be, you know, objective number one.
I mean, last year we saw it, Al, all those games where they lost by one goal or one plus an empty netter, to where they were taking a tie game or a lead, be it at home, on the road, into those third periods, and the third period just completely got away from them. Do you think that with some of the pieces they've added, whether it's a Skinner, whether it's a Kurashev, whether it's a year's more experience for Eklund and Celebrini and Will Smith, do you think those collective pieces can allow the Sharks to be that much better in the third period when it is crunch time, when games are won?
I don't think it's going to hurt, right? We talk about it, over 5,000 games of NHL experience. I say it every interview leading up to the season because we have nothing else to talk about at this point. But that veteran leadership, it has to account for something. Now, if it's not, that's the problem. And I think that it will not go on the young guys if they're not closing out third periods this year. There's so many veterans in that group that it should go to the veterans that are not leading properly to get the best out of the young guys. And during those third period moments where things are teetering, who's going to be the voice to step up? Right now, it looks like Tyler Toffoli is going to be that voice. Yes, there is no captain, but Toffoli has the A the entire time. And I think he has the respect of the room, so he's going to be a voice. You got Klingberg. You got Reeves. I think Reeves, if you're at the preseason games, you can hear Reeves screaming from up in the press box. And yes, obviously, there isn't a full tank, right, literally and figuratively, when we're talking about preseason games. But Reeves is going to be a big vocal piece. And I know there's questions about what he has left in the tank. Well, he looked great in preseason, but also if he's not playing the 50 or 60 games or the 70 games or whatever it is, he's going to be a presence in that dressing room that's going to teach the young guys how to carry themselves. He's been around the best in the game. And so I think they've insulated themselves with better veterans. You got Nick Leddy, Klingberg, Orlov, who's Orlov's going to be big for Shakir Mukhamudulin. I think they have what they need if they're in those tight games again. Now they got to get in those tight games again and hopefully don't take a step back, because we also have seen during rebuilds or builds, depending where you're looking at it, you know, there's always that optimism when things look better and they get a little better. And then next season, well, they just take a step back. You have to keep pushing forward and you have to keep being in those close games, being competitive, and then you need to finish it with your veterans. And I think the Sharks have that, and I think they have enough talent too to kind of make it work.
Well, we look no further than Detroit. That would be the parallel or the easy comparison. And then again, maybe in a worst case scenario, and I hate to keep saying this because I feel like I'm picking on them, is you don't want to become Buffalo. And we can make a different argument about Ottawa and what they've done, and they're finally showing signs. But maybe Anaheim and the steps they took last year, is that more in line with what you think maybe fans should be not necessarily hopeful for, but maybe keep their expectations in line with that type of a step forward?
Yeah, I think that's got to be the best case scenario, which is Anaheim was right around playoff picture until the end of the road. They made some moves too throughout the year that are going to pay dividend this year, right? Like, they got Jacob Trouba and they got Kreider in the offseason, but Trouba was last year while they're kind of still competitive. And so maybe that's something that Greer could do, is bring in a guy that's going to help them kind of push. But yeah, I think best case scenario, 60 to 70 points. I know Ducks were a little bit higher than that, but that's what you got to expect. You have to hope that that's where it goes. Now, if they're in the 50-point range again, I think that's a step back. I think they need to take a step forward. 30 wins, some overtime losses, maybe pick off a few 35 wins. That would be really, really the productive step that the San Jose Sharks need to go out and then start filling up the roster with longer-term answers, right? Like, Mike Greer has tried to get the short-term answers in-house. But now if they take the next step like Anaheim did, can they get a little bit longer term answers to help this group kind of move forward? Because, yeah, they have, I mean, you look at their opening night roster, I think they have $2.5 million in cap space, and that could be totally deceiving, because then you're like, oh, wow, they've spent the gills, which they did. So Hasso Plattner, shout out to him. He's paying, I don't know, $30 million.
$34 million, yeah.
In dead money. So that all comes off the books, except for Ryan Ellis next year. But they got they have the tools. They still have the cap space. They still have the draft picks for next year to take this one step further. 2 years from now, if we're really talking about Detroit, Buffalo, Ottawa, the 15-year streak, if we're talking about that again, they are stuck in mud, and that's not where you want to be.
The one thing I will say about the 50-point season, if it's in the realm of possibilities, because anything's within the realm of possibilities, I think it's unlikely, just like a Stanley Cup is unlikely, but hashtag get Gavin would be the comeback. And then you're talking about a young group of forwards that would be about as scary as anything that we've seen in the modern NHL. Not that I'm trying to say that they would be McDavid and Dreisaitl alike, but I don't know. I mean, if that was added to the mix, I certainly wouldn't argue with it. But don't we feel, however, like they need to move beyond that? Like, yes, I wouldn't argue with it if that was the outcome, but is it a better outcome to just take a step forward, even if you don't land a top prospect? I mean, that's where you can get into an argument of semantics, because it's like, you're either in the playoffs or you're out. If you're going to be out, shouldn't you be out? You know, I mean, that's where I can get into the unknowns and the arguments about, yeah, there are different ways that you can value a season.
Yeah, I think I only question that in the sense of the New York Islanders won the first overall pick. We saw it last year. The Sharks did what you're talking about, kind of at the trade deadline, trade everyone off, even maybe trade off an extra piece in Fabian and Zetterlund. They end up last in the standings, best odds for number one, and they don't get it. They have a team that was 10 spots back, jump all the way up. So who's to say if the Sharks just play hard, play competitive, get a couple extra wins, and they can still get the luck of the lottery? And I think that's the problem. The problem and the great thing with the lottery is that it keeps everyone in the bottom 10 kind of in it, but it also doesn't ensure you the first overall pick if you are the worst team in the league. And so I think for the Sharks, the fan base, everyone involved, they got to be thinking wins, and they got to be thinking, how can we take a step forward? Because they already have their generational talent, mm-hmm. right? In Macklin Celebrini. If they didn't have that, yeah, maybe you're looking at Gavin McKenna. And also on top of that, you start building all your forward group out. I know the salary cap is going crazy right now, and it is going to go crazy. But in 3 to 4 years, when those entry-level deals are up, you're going to spend all your money on 18 and 19-year-old kids, which is great, but they still may not have the veteran, like Stanley Cup pedigree that they need. So they still need the back end too. I know Cagnoni's good. Dickinson's good. Mukhtar Mudulin is looking very, very good, but they still need a little more back end help. And so I think you're better off this season to push as hard as possible and show growth in the franchise, because it's good business at the end of the day. And you can't ensure the number one overall pick. If it was the NFL and you're like, I'm getting the last pick, I'm getting Gavin McKenna, yeah, and I got 5 games to go and I need to lose the last 5, I don't know. Maybe you take that chance, but it's not. And so you can't ensure yourself getting that first overall pick. And we even saw Utah last, you know, lottery, the balls bouncing their way. So you just can't really, you can't quantify it. And I think it's going to mean so much more for all these guys, like Macklin Celebrini, Will Smith, Colin Graf, Michael Mesa, Sam Dickinson. They're not used to losing.
No.
William Eklund, they're pissed off about losing. And so if you just lose more, I think you're in a state where you start losing guys, losing like them, their need to want to be here. And they start questioning, is the franchise really moving in the right direction? So I think to me, there's way more question marks and way more uncertainty and earthquakes if they don't have a season that shows some huge progression.
Well, that's a great way to segue to my next point, is that we have seen that the Sharks' big acquisitions over the years have come by way of trade. Guys have not signed here in free agency typically. However, once guys get to San Jose, they never want to leave. I mean, Dan Boyle didn't finish his career here, but he lives here now. I mean, these are the things we take account to. Joe Thornton lives here. Patrick Marleau lives here. I mean, and these guys talk about how great the franchise is. That said, if the Sharks want to be greater players in free agency, maybe not get the whale, but get some pieces that they need, is it entirely dependent on Mac and Will and Ecky and these young players, Mesa, Dickinson, Askarov, et cetera, to get that team into the playoff picture, to show that, hey, even without the big free agent names, these guys have been able to point the ship in the right direction. Because I think that that's the pressure that's on them. I don't even know if it's about Macklin being the next superstar, all the talk about him being the face of the NHL, the next face, I should say, or Will Smith and, you know, continuing to show that type of growth. I think it's on them proving to the NHL that they can do it on their own, get into that contending window, and then the pieces will start coming. That, to me, is the pressure point, not all the other trappings of being a star.
100%. And you look across all sports, like, yes, NHL, there's a lot of talk about the tax-free states and they get the guys, and that's 100% true. But they're also, the Lightning and the Panthers are just good right now too, right? Like, you're just talking about no one, and it was years ago, decades ago, the Sharks, no one was complaining about California taxes when the Sharks were really good, when the Ducks were good, when the Kings were good. You know, the Giants went out and got Rafael Devers, kind of to your point, because they couldn't lull to get the free agent here. But that's also because they're a 500 team. So when you're winning, guys are going to want to come play with you. And there's already so much respect for Macklin Celebrini amongst his peers that I think if he shows that he's taking a step and he's leading this franchise, there's guys that are going to want to come play with him. Like Connor McDavid, like Joe Thornton, whoever was on the wing for Joe Thornton is going to get 35 goals. So let's make that happen. I think that you're spot on there, and that those guys need to show that the teal core, so I'm calling it another moniker. I want credit for this one. The teal core is going to move in the right direction, and then the free agents come. And 2028, let me just put this out here. The free agent class of 2028, which is 2 years from now, when the Sharks, by everyone's account, should be back in contention with the way, if the rebuild's going the right direction. Who are now free agents in 2028? Connor McDavid, Austin Matthews, Zach Werenski. That is a good class that really kind of lines up with where the Sharks are trying to go. And I'm not, you know, and they have a load of cap space. Obviously, there's probably a Macklin extension in there, Will Smith extension in there. Oh, Misa, Sam Dickinson. Those extensions are probably in there. But I'm just saying, if you look for it as the direction of the franchise, if you start winning and the young guys are there, and then you could pick up one of these back-end superstars who are looking for a change of scenery, 2028. I would just put that out there. It's years down the road, but that's where the Sharks should look to if they're going to push really hard and try and get a free agent big fish to come on down.
What's wild is that last year in the preseason, you and I talked about Macklin Celebrini, and we kind of said, like, is he actually this good? And we said, well, it's preseason, we'll have to wait and see. But we kept on saying, like, I think he is this good. And then you and I were watching the first game, which was nationally televised, but we were at NBC together, and we saw Macklin come out right in the first period, score the Sharks' first goal just by making something happen. And we watched him have a three-point game, and then he was injured for a little bit, and then we came back to where, you know, he was in the lineup for the rest of the season, every single game. And we kept on kind of saying to each other off camera, is like, I think people are only not saying he's as good as he is because he's 18. Yeah. But that's the thing, Al. He had only been 18 for 3.5 months when his NHL career started last year. Now he's, you know, 19 going into year number two. And he just, I think as good as he was last year, I think he's going to be that much better this year. I think we only started scratching the surface, which is amazing because he just showed so much potential. And how many more points would he have had if he had been on a team with more snipes around him, guys who were more consistently putting it in the back of the net, or guys who could feed him the puck when he was in a dangerous situation? He was alarmingly good. And I don't say that to be hyperbolic, but last year you and I on various occasions kind of looked at each other like, are you seeing this? Are we actually seeing this? Like, we're not as crazy as we might have sounded back in October when we thought he was this good. I mean, now I think you can make an argument that he is one of the top 10 players in the NHL. And I don't think, you might not agree with me, and I don't mean you specifically, but I can at least put up an argument about why that's correct.
Yeah, if you're making the argument, you're not saying he is. I mean, you are, but you're just making the argument. It's just like when you compare all-time greats and you're making the argument for an all-time great, like, and someone doesn't agree. The baseline is they're great, but who's the all-time greats? You know, that's what you're kind of going. But Macklin, you know, today at practice, he looks bigger, a little bit bigger, like an inch taller maybe, but he looks thicker, like filled out, put on some weight in the offseason. He looks like he's demanding the puck even more and really running the show. Like last year, he was running the show, but this year, I mean, when you're at practice, he is the facilitator of everything, and that started early on. And I also, to your point, and this isn't a knock against Michael Misa or Sam Dickinson, mostly Michael Misa because he's a forward. Celebrini dominated every point of the offseason last year. Training camp, dev camp, rookie faceoff, preseason. When he was on the ice, he was noticeable every single time. And at that point, like you're saying, we're like, is he the best player on the ice? And it didn't take long for Tyler Toffoli to be like, oh, he's our best player. Like, yeah. What is that? It was like 2 months into the season. And Tyler Toffoli has been around pretty good guys. Yeah. Just so to that point. And then now with Michael Misa, and this isn't a knock against Michael Misa, because I think he's still going to have a season maybe closer to Will Smith, which is great. Yeah. That's still, he was top six in rookie voting, right? If he goes this way, but he's not dominating the training camps. He's not dominating the drills, the preseason. You can see a little bit more tentativeness in Michael Misa, and he's getting acclimated to the NHL speed at every level, not just like games, but practice, drills, like all that stuff. And so it's something that you notice when you have Macklin Celebrini a year before, the first overall pick, and then Michael Misa, number two overall pick, who's been solid. And he's never looked out of place when he's playing in games. He's had really, really good performances. Hasn't filled it up point-wise, but he's made good defensive plays. But also he said that he needs to demand the puck more. Mm-hmm. And that was never an issue with Macklin Celebrini. So I think that's how you know, right? You're seeing two high-level prospects, one pick apart, 1 year apart, and Macklin was already so comfortable in who he was coming into the NHL and doing it. And that probably also has to do with his upbringing, right? Like he's not stepping into a professional atmosphere for the very first time. He's got his dad, who's been around, well-documented, everybody from as far as recovery with the Warriors, Steph, and, you know, Macklin was around a little bit, but still just being in that. And his dad was a professional soccer player. Yeah. So I think that's the biggest case for Macklin Celebrini and what he is and who he's going to be, is that he already looks in a different stratosphere last year this time than the prospects that the Sharks are trying to bring along this year. And then also, like, when you got Sidney Crosby and Nate McKinnon gassing you up, I mean, there's nothing else better. And he's already in the Olympic conversation.
Yeah.
That's also a huge thing. And I know we're not going to maybe not get there, but this Olympic thing, I think, is huge for every team, but especially the Sharks, with these young guys who are going to try and make a push, or, you know, the Wenbergs, the Eklunds, these guys want to make Olympic clubs. So to your point, getting off to fast starts, it's going to be important for the Sharks, but also if you want to play in Milan.
I think it is interesting that the NHL saw what a great reaction they had last year to the Four Nations. And obviously, you know, previous times, you know, when the Olympics had featured the pros, everybody got gassed for it and really just all sorts of stoked. But I think that when you put that against the rising popularity of international soccer, and you kind of saw that reaction to the Four Nations, it was, the NHL had that moment of, oh, we really need to push this. Like, everybody got really into it. And obviously, you know, you start thinking about how they're bringing back the World Cup for hockey and such. And, you know, that didn't include Russia, obviously. It just, you could have an incredible, incredible next level of what people are going to be tuning in to hockey for, which breeds more fans, which brings in more money. And, you know, one hand kind of feeds the other. But, you know, that was one of those moments last year, the way everyone responded to Four Nations, even the players, like talking to the guys after that, when they weren't in it, they were just watching it while they were in, you know, Cancun or Maui. Just to hear them get jazzed about it was pretty awesome as well. Here's one. I'm not trying to be a downer. I just want a realistic take from you. Are you concerned about Yaroslav Askarov after the preseason he had, where he did not look like he was ever as comfortable as we saw last year? Or is it preseason, working on things? The team is not the team that'll be out there on the ice. Maybe he doesn't feel the juice the same way in the preseason. Is there concern? Is there whatever? Where are you on Asky right now?
Well, I'm a little concerned, but I'm also going to be Brock Purdy here. You remember when Brock Purdy a few years back threw like 7 interceptions in one practice, and he was like, after Shanahan, and we both were like, we're just, you know, it's preseason, it's practice. Like, this is when you try things. This is when you try to get better. So that's what I'm going with. Now, I think we find out game one, his first start. If he's locked in and if he comes out and is really good, then we have our answer that preschool or preseason he maybe wasn't as juiced for. But that's also, like, you want him juiced. You want him, like, because Alex Nedeljkovic looked good.
Yeah.
He was very solid. To be fair to Askey, the last game was the first period looked bad. The middle period was good. Third one wasn't. But then his first start for two periods, he's really strong. And then it kind of wasn't his fault on the other side of things. But, yeah, I'm a little concerned just because I thought some of the goals that were got past him are shots we saw him save last year. And that's got to be concerning a little bit. But also, you know, the thing that gives me solace in all this is that everyone, scouts, every podcast you listen to, they are so high on this kid. You know, Prodman with The Athletic on their most recent Calder Trophy Watch podcast said that he has the athleticism of Marc-Andre Fleury. So, like, how am I supposed to be concerned about this if these people all think he's the next coming to Marc-Andre Fleury?
Yeah.
Could that not happen? It could not happen. But I'm going to let one start go, first couple starts, and see how it goes. He's also, you know, a young guy getting ready for his first full season, so maybe he's saving his legs. I'm making a lot of excuses at this moment, but I think at this point, you got to, because he is your franchise goalie. You went out and got him.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly, if that doesn't work out, as much as Mike Greer has built this thing up really, really strongly with a great prospect pool, all the assets you got for Tomáš Hertl became Jaroslav Askarov. If that doesn't work out, that is a miss that you can't have. Now, could it be like, you know, the 49ers going back to them? You got Joshua Ravensbergen chilling right there. So maybe he becomes, you know, Trey Lance doesn't work out. You got Brock Purdy coming in. So who knows? And there's always, you never know with those things. And that's the great thing about sports is that there's always going to be a story that unfolds that you're not ready for. But I'm ready for Jaroslav Askarov to take the crease at some point and start 50 games and be the backstop of the future. Because I think the Sharks need him to be. And also, he has a great personality that is going to kind of level out that dressing room. There's a lot of different personalities in there. And he's going to be one that I think fans have already fallen in love with. And so if you can market that, you can market a third string quarterback these days. So maybe you could still market Jaroslav Askarov if he's not your starter.
I've hit on a lot of the big points now. Is there anything that I haven't touched on that is particularly at the forefront of your mind?
I think how difficult it seemed like the cutdown was is something to take notice. You know, Cardwell, we had Barracuda Media Day this week. And, you know, he really wanted to come in and prove a point. And he did everything he could. He made it as difficult as possible. Then you have Pavel Regenda, who I think put himself on the map in front of Sharks' eyes. You know, he was a guy who came over midseason, Anaheim Ducks, and he made a name for himself. And then you have Kegnoni, who's there. And so I think then you have Musty, Cam Lund. So what I'm saying is I think the thing that we're not talking about is that right now this opening night roster, which took 3 million years to get announced, is going to look very different in 3 months, 3 to 4 months.
Yeah.
And you're going to have some guys come up like Quentin Musty, who hates losing, man. Barracuda Media Day, that guy hates losing. And that's another guy like Macklin Celebrini. Macklin Celebrini has his hate losing. Quentin Musty hates losing too. Like that was something I came away with. But you're going to have guys come in here that are going to have to make an impact.
Yeah.
And Colin Graf was just that a year ago. I think Cam Lund is the next Colin Graf. I'm just talking about all these guys that are going to push and beat a big moment. They're going to be a storyline in this Sharks season. And one of them is probably going to be the reason the Sharks are where they are. That's my guess. I have a feeling someone's coming up and going to push this thing a little bit forward and really, really solidify themselves as a top prospect and maybe a winger that the Sharks are going to have for a long time.
Al, I know you've got stuff to do as you're a father and a family man, so I will let you go. But I appreciate your time, and we are back at it on Saturday night, game number 2 of the season. We'll be on NBC Sports California. And also, I know you've been doing a podcast all summer. Can you please tell the people where they can hear your dulcet tones to hear what you've
got
to say on a number of topics?
Thank you. Oh, yeah, we're starting. The mic is open. It's called The Mic is Open. I was doing it once a week. Now with season starting, I'm hoping to do a couple. But you can check that out on YouTube and Spotify. The mic is open. You joined me so graciously. I'm sure we'll run it back here during the season. But it's a fun podcast that, yeah, we're going to talk about industry stuff, Shark stuff. I have people throughout the industry come on, not just here locally, but also like career advice. And big thing for me is dad advice. And hopefully we'll get some ladies on there. We haven't yet, but some parenting advice, some mom advice. So I just think we have multi-layers to all of us. And the more we show those off, I think is helpful. And also for the next generation of broadcasters who are being told you can't have a family, you can't do this with your life. I think it's good to show them that at a certain point, yes, early on, you're going to lose a lot of stuff, but
like sleep,
you got to go in. Yeah, but you got to get in. So yeah, the mic is open, but across all platforms, A Hoshida Sports. One thing I did right starting my career was making sure everything was the same.
Al, you're the man. I appreciate your time as always. I will see you at the tank for game number one, and then we'll be together Saturday night at NBC. All right.
Chomp chomp. Let's go.
That's Alan Hoshida, and we are out of time. 6 o'clock pre-game, 6:30 pre-game, 7 o'clock go time tonight as the San Jose Sharks host the Vegas Golden Knights in game number one of the season. The new year is finally here. Go Sharks for Team Teal. I'm Ted Ramey signing off.
You've been listening to the San Jose Sharks Morning Tide, brought to you by Coors Light on the Sharks Audio Network.